Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and it's great to have you with me today. I have a great guest on the show as well today. I always enjoy chatting with my guests and learning from them, and today's conversation with positive psychology and neuroscience expert Ruth Kudzi is no different. That's coming up in a moment. First, I want to draw your attention to a simple way to de-stress and re-energize your system as we head towards what is, for some, a difficult time of the year. I have a simple 10-minute audio to help you do just that on my audio page at thepracticalalchemist.uk. Just head over to thepracticalalchemist.uk/audio and let the words wash right through you. If you're looking for something more individual, an energy clearing session that will relax you and enhance your well-being, then book a time with me at safehavenhealing.uk. A recent client said her session was like having a massage, except there was no touching. It's a great companion to the kind of coaching work that today's guest Ruth Kudzi offers. Ruth is a master coach. She's a best-selling author, a speaker, and a podcaster, as well as an expert in positive psychology and neuroscience. I was delighted to have her join me recently for a chat. Now, you might find some of what she says surprising. I know I did. Here's how the conversation went. Ruth, you help people live a more joyous, wonderful life, helping people make better decisions, improve their well-being, and helping them to perform more effectively, something that I sometimes think I need very much. But you use neuroscience and positive psychology to help people. What does that mean? And I mean, I'm perfectly familiar with neuroscience and positive psychology, but I think a lot of people, if they even know or have heard of the terms, they're a bit skeptical. So tell us to start with what that is and why it's effective.
So neuroscience really is the study of the brain and the nervous system. So when we're looking at that, it's thinking about, what do we know about the brain? And by the way, there's a lot that we don't know, but what do we know? So, you know, we know now so much more because we can scan people's brains. So we know a lot more, but, you know, we know that if we are under chronic stress, for example, then that impacts the way that we lead. It impacts the way that we show up. It impacts our well-being. We know that if we multitask, actually, our brain is less effective than if we were smoking cannabis before doing a task. Ooh. So multitasking is actually worse than being stoned. And that was some research from UCL. So it's about understanding what is going on in our brains or the people that we're communicating with brains to think about how we can work with them. Because our brain wasn't set up to solve complex algebra. Our brain's basic job is to keep us safe.
Yeah.
So when we know that, it helps us understand more about human behavior.
That's fascinating. Yeah. And I love the way that you're describing it there. But I had not heard of that research. Mm. Women, you know, people keep saying, are good at multitasking. So, I mean, is that not true then? Or, you know,
it's not true. It's just, you know, women have, so we all have a cognitive load. So we can all only, like, this idea of bandwidth, and it does quite annoy me. So my husband always says, like, I don't have the bandwidth. And I'm like, well, I've got to create the bandwidth because I've got all of these things. But women carry more of a cognitive load than men. And I think it's up to 50% more. So we are much more likely to carry things, you know, and I think a lot of it is because of our beliefs about what we should do rather than society's beliefs, but we're more likely to carry things. So we aren't better at multitasking. We're better at switching. But when you're constantly switching between tasks, it takes 18 to 20 minutes to actually get your focus back. Mm. So, yeah, there's this idea that we can do multiple things. And I guess it kind of comes from that that movement, definitely when I was growing up, all of the media and magazines were saying, like, you can do everything. And I know that Michelle Obama said recently, you can do everything, but you don't, but not at the same time, or something like that. I haven't got that completely right.
Yeah.
And I think that there's this idea that as women, we should be able to,
have everything,
have everything, a perfect house, a great career, a perfect relationship. And yeah, we can't.
Not all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And, sometimes we're striving for these things. And it's so, cognitively, like, we don't actually have the bandwidth to deal with all of those things. So we get something called decision fatigue, and we start to get resentful of people if we're making all of the decisions, and actually our trust goes down, and other people's trust in us goes down too. And I think when you say that, like, when have you kind of really felt that you've got everything on you and you've been making all the decisions, and you, in a way, we create these environments for ourselves. And I do that too. I'm not perfect. I know all of this stuff, but sometimes I'm like, by leading all the time, by thinking that I need to do everything, I'm actually disempowering those people around me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And while you were talking, I was thinking back to, was it Shirley Conran who wrote a book called Superwoman way back in the, was it the 70s, 80s, somewhere around, I can't remember. But, that was really, as far as I recall, telling women we could have everything and that we could be absolutely fabulous in every area of our lives, whatever we turned our hand to. That's not true, though.
I think that we need to think about where we want to focus. And, it's so easy to think that we have to be doing everything, and we have to be doing everything at a really, really high level.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like there's this kind of, this is always striving and striving and striving. Actually, this links into positive psychology, so it's a nice link back, that often we're striving and we're not enjoying where we are. We're not in the moment. We're either always in the future, or we can be too stuck in the past, which also isn't helpful. But we're always kind of like, well, when X happens, when it's Monday, when I achieve this, when I, when I earn X amount, when I weigh this amount, and we're just stuck in the future, and we're always kind of living our lives with this future lens rather than going, well, actually, where I am is quite good. And maybe I do have piles of washing. I recently found out that was an ADHD trait, and I was late diagnosed ADHD. So I was really happy with that. Maybe I do have piles of washing all over my house, but actually in the grand scheme of things, is that a big deal? Not really. So I think sometimes we need to get perspective. And I was going to look back to positive psychology as well. In positive psychology, like in normal psychology, we're looking at, okay, how do we get to zero? And positive psychology says, actually, how can we go from zero to plus five? How can we flourish? How can we thrive? How can we live meaningful lives? And often that might be doing less, the irony. So I think people can be a bit skeptical of positive psychology. And I tell you why. I think it's because it's got positive in the name.
Ooh.
Because now people know about psychology, but they're like, ooh, what's this? What's this positive version? And it's like, well, actually, it's just looking at what is good and building on it, rather than a lot of traditional psychology, and this is what I originally studied, which is looking at what isn't working in a way to improve it. So it's just a different lens.
It is a different lens, and I like that way of describing it. And this notion that we have to do everything. Now, I've had people on the show who've talked to me about how to organize your life and how to do everything. But I remember one guest in particular, she absolutely diarized everything, had a schedule for everything that went way in advance, like a year in advance. She'd know what she was going to be doing. And I was in awe of that ability to plan, but we can't all do that, I don't think. She thrives on it.
But I think this is the thing.
Yeah.
It's about understanding what you need to thrive, because what I need to thrive will be different to that. I mean, a year in advance, that wouldn't work for me.
No.
I struggle to even think about what I'm going to eat for lunch every day.
Me too.
I'm like, I mean, it's coming up, so I better make a decision soon. But I think this is the whole thing. It's about working out what you need and recognizing that that's going to be different, because all of our brains are different. That's a basic premise of psychology, individual differences. Although we as humans really like to categorize, because we like to think, are we part of that group or are we not? And that's what we're always unconsciously doing. So our brains categorize things for ease. But actually, when we do that, we forget about the fact that everybody is an individual and every brain is different.
Yeah, it's very true. And like you, I am really not comfortable. I think that's the thing. I'm not comfortable with making plans so far ahead. I'm much more comfortable with just allowing things to pop up, or allowing, you know, stuff to happen. It's kind of more exciting, I think, that way for me. It kind of keeps me going, keeps me on my toes, you know. But yeah, we are all very different. So when you're working with somebody, tell me the kind of things that the kind of challenges that people have that they come to you with, and how you might help them using positive psychology and some neuroscience backing that up.
I mean, one of the things that people always come to, some variation of boundaries, work-life balance. I still think, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, we all have this societal norms that we all conform to. And it's really interesting because we in the UK, especially in England, are much more like the Americans and the Europeans in our approach to work. Like, we have taken on that kind of work hard mentality, whereas when we cross the channel, they've got a really different work ethic. And I don't understand why that is, but we have, for whatever reason. So I think there still is, there's this very, maybe again, it's from like kind of that post-war period that it was like, let's work hard, let's rebuild the country. That was maybe the messaging that our parents or grandparents got. But there is this work hard thing. And so whoever I'm working with, there always seems to be this thing about boundaries, saying no, understanding how to meet your needs, and kind of viewing yourself as an individual and as a human, not as a machine. Because most people, I very rarely coach someone who doesn't want to do a really good job, but I often coach people who are not doing good jobs because they're doing things like being at their desk for the whole period of their day. They're doing things like not going outside because they feel they've got a deadline. They're doing things like being on their phone when they're with their families. But they love their families, but they're feeling like they need to do these things. And obviously social media is making this worse, because phones and all of these things work on our dopamine receptors. So we become addicted to all of this different technology, which is created to make our lives easier. And so, yeah, a huge part of that is helping people to understand their behavior, to understand the reasons behind it. Like, okay, so they'll be like, but I really, really want to spend time with my kids, but then I'm checking my work emails and I feel really bad about it. Okay, well, first of all, like, what's a simple solution? So it's often like, well, we put our phone in a different room, or we take our emails off our phone. And honestly, it's never rocket science, but often we're so in the moment of doing things and we're so kind of unaware of what we're doing, that it's when you take a step back that you can go, okay, like, this isn't working. So there's a lot of exploration of what is and isn't working for people. But yeah, the big thing is, yeah, this whole idea about being always on.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially around work. And I work with leaders, business owners, and it all seems to boil down to this. And I think it's, It's very rare that you meet someone who says, actually, I've got my boundaries and things sorted.
You know, I hadn't even thought of that, but it's so true. Well, we'll hear more from Ruth Kudzi on that and more shortly. But first, let's hear from our station sponsors. Back after this.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and today's guest, Ruth Kudzi, who was talking before the break about boundaries at work. Here she is with more on the subject.
Even in my team meeting this morning, one of my team members said, and she was kind of asking it, and she knew, when I'm not working in the evening, can I take my emails off my phone? And I was like, and so I just said in the meeting, who has their emails on their phone? And guess who didn't? The two people who are experts at admin.
Ah.
And I said, what does this show you guys? And everyone was like, I said, you know, it's up to you how you manage your time. It's up to you if you have emails. But 100%, you can take emails off your phone. Like, there's no expectation that you have that. But I think because people work flexibly as well, there is this internal expectation. And this is what we look at. You know, what makes you behave in that way? What are your beliefs? What is driving this behavior? Because it's usually internally. We like to think it's externally, but it's very rare that, you know, I've never known a boss that expects you to reply in the evening to emails. I've never known that. But I've worked over the last 15, 20 years in environments where people reply to emails at all hours. And it's not driven, it's not driven by the bosses.
Yes, I agree with you there. Although sometimes, of course, if you're working with different time zones, then that can be an issue. However, we're not talking about that here. And it is something that stresses us. It is something that raises cortisol levels. It causes all kinds of problems. And that's where, you know, we get to the health and well-being part. I mean, well, you know, in any case, psychology is all about well-being. But, you know, when you get to that physical side of it, so it's really important to find out what is causing you stress, to look at it from the other direction, right? What is causing you stress? And for me, it would be looking at emails at all hours of the day. And I don't always respond to them immediately, even if I look. Now that can wait till tomorrow. Not doing that now.
Yeah. And it's in every part of your life, because stress is a really interesting thing, because we think stress is always bad. It's actually not always bad. It's like, it's part of everyday life, but it's that chronic stress.
Yes.
And actually, so there's, I started doing research on this in like the 60s and 70s, but there's two kind of different ways of looking at stress. There's like significant life events, you know, where everybody will experience some element of stress. And it always makes me smile, because getting married and getting divorced are both in the top 10. I'm like, what does this say about humans? But there's always those. We know what those are. For example, I say I'm never going to move house again in my life.
I've said that. How many times have I said that, right?
Yeah, because our brain forgets as well. Like, you know, we forget that traumatic experience, we forget that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the daily stressors. And the daily stressors are actually, I can't remember there's a special name for them, but I can't remember it. The daily stressors can actually be, over time, can have more of an impact. So things like a commute. Could be like, there's so many little things that can build up, and that can actually cause, you know, that really chronic stress. And it's that chronic stress that impacts our immune functioning, so it impacts our ability, you know, we're more likely to get ill. but also impacts our emotional well-being too. So it's really interesting. So yeah, cortisol, it's and the evidence is that it's not only cortisol, which is we know is the stress hormone, it's cortisol and the feelings of stress which impact us. And they impact our decision-making skills. They mean that our executive function isn't as sharp. They impact our memory. By the way, if you're my kind of age too and above, you'll get that as well. So it's not necessarily that you're stressed. If you're a woman, you get the added bonus of getting that when you're in your 40s and 50s too. But generally, you know, it's that, like, if we can't remember stuff, if we're struggling to make decisions, it's often that our brains are flooded with cortisol and our brains are looking at how can we fight the stressor rather than, as I said at the beginning, it's my maybe not complex algebra, but how can we make that decision? What's the best option? And so you might start recognizing when you're struggling to make decisions or when you're struggling with your memory or to focus, that might be a symptom of stress. So it's starting to think about what are these little things that show me that I'm stressed? And then what is it that's causing that? You know, is it that I've got too many deadlines? Is it, you know, what are the things that lead to that feeling?
Yes. And then I'm thinking about when I lived in London and I would commute. And the stress every day of, you know, trying to get to work on time, knowing the London transport system, which is not always the most reliable. And, you know, you never knew, really. So you'd have to try and make allowances for that. And then, I mean, on the one hand, I found commuting on public transport in London very healthy because I was running up and down escalators and I was really quite fit. But then on the other hand, the stress of it. So then it's very difficult to work out how to minimize that stress because it's kind of, you know, you're going to have it on a daily basis unless you leave so much time to allow for you to get to work on time, which I guess is one way around it. So, you know, we can't always really, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that we can't always do a great deal to minimize these little stresses in our lives, but maybe we can do more to get over them. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we can't avoid stress. It's there all the time. We know that. We, you know, it's a fact of life. We can think about our reactions and our responses. And a lot of this is around our capacity. So there's a really classic, they use this in the NHS, there's this classic kind of tool where you look at imagining that you've got a bucket you carry around with you that is where you put all your stress. And obviously you can think about the shape of your bucket and the size of your bucket, and then you can draw a line. So, you know, whereabouts are you in terms of the levels? And then you can think about what can you let go of and put down, or what can you, you know, how can you create a hole in the bucket? But also, how can you increase the capacity of your bucket? So we know, you know, there are certain things that reduce our ability to deal with stress. Okay. Gosh, I used to work with a doctor. Now, I can't remember his complete thing, but it was something like, if you're angry, tired, there was another one. But yeah, generally, if we're hungry, angry, or tired, it's not a good time to be adding in on the stress. Like, what can we do? And it is all of that stuff around self-care. And I think that self-care has been hijacked by the kind of, you see people who are like, oh, I'm doing self-care on Instagram. They're always at a really expensive spa, like enjoying stuff. But it's not even that. It's like,
no,
sitting, having a cup of coffee in the garden, like, you know, going for a walk, talking to your neighbor, like, it's, you know, because you're getting some human connection. So it's about you, not the neighbor. Stroking your pet, you know, all of those things, eating nutritious foods, actually not eating at your desk. You know, all of those things increase our capacity to deal with stress. So it's thinking about, actually, what do I need so I can deal with this and respond to things rather than react? And the London commuting is a really interesting one, because I remember once I used to always have to catch, everyone thinks the tube is bad. You haven't lived in London if you think the tube is the worst. The worst is getting the overground trains like into a main station. And I remember I used to always switch at Clapham Junction. If anyone has ever been there, I think it's meant to be like the most busy station in the country.
I think it is, yeah.
And I was switching trains because I need to get to Waterloo, not Victoria. And literally, I was a little bit slow in getting off the train and somebody just pushed me. And like, this is, and it was like, when I turned around, it was a man in his 50s wearing a suit. He was really apologetic, but obviously he was so high in terms of his stress levels that even a tiny thing just pushed him.
Yeah. Clapham Junction will do that to you.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, we want to be the person that goes, actually, right, you know, I'm late for work. Well, what can I do? What can I control? What can't I control? I can't control anything about the trains. I can give them a call or send them an email. Remember, we didn't used to be able to do that.
No, exactly.
Just turned up. Yeah. You give them a call or send them an email, and then I could read my book. I could sit here and, you know, like, it is really about that. And I think that we, if we are too overloaded capacity wise, that's when we start reacting. And when we're able to give ourselves that moment of reflection, we can respond. So it's always about, how do we create capacity? And that, it goes back to that. What are our boundaries? What are the things that we're going to do? Like, even when I'm saying that, like, I'm kind of, it looks like quite a nice day. What do I do in my lunch hour? Do I go for a walk? Do I do my Peloton? Do I go and talk to my husband? Like, what are the things that I need today that will help me with my capacity? It's sunny. I'm going to go for a walk. Maybe with my husband. But, you know, because if we don't build that capacity, that bucket is going to get harder and harder to carry, and things will start flowing out of it. That's the long and short of it.
So true. And at one point, what I started doing on the tube in London was meditating. And somebody said to me once, well, that's not meditation. You can't meditate in a tube. Well, you can. It's just, you know, it's just shutting it all out and just going in. And there was actually one particular meditation that I did, which was gorgeous and would really open up my brain, my head. It was really nourishing, actually. It was using energy and flowing through the crown of your head. And I'd find that actually, rather than getting to work stressed and a bit, you know, muddled, I would get there actually quite clear and, you know, and ready for the day's work. So that is another thing that you can do. But I agree with you. I mean, it's sunny here today. I'll be going out for a walk as well and just enjoying the nature around me. And even if you're in a city, I'm not in a city, but even if you are, it's a great thing to do, because just getting that sunshine, getting a bit of vitamin D into you.
Yeah, well, we know, don't we? Vitamin D is like really, really key for our well-being.
Yeah.
But also, you know, for our brain health. So all of those things that we know about for our physical health, and we all know them, like we all know them. Our brain is the same. Like, exercise is good for our brain. They published a study last week that they found that the over 50s have been most impacted by COVID. And actually they're seeing a lot of Alzheimer's and dementia, like earlier onset, you know. And we know currently we can't prevent those things happening, but we can do things that will delay the onset. And we know that we've all probably got different onsets based on lots and lots of different things. But a lot of that was actually the reduction in exercise that people did over COVID. It was the increase in alcohol that people had over COVID. And it was a lack of connection, because our brains need connection as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking to your neighbor, like, it is good for you. That is an act of self-care. Because when we connect with people, that's what our brains are designed to converse with different people.
Yes. And I was thinking about that yesterday as I was having my walk. I live somewhere where everybody says hello to everybody. And I reflected on that yesterday as I was walking and thinking, yeah, you see, this is good. This is connection. This is community. And this is really healthy. Again, comparing that to London, where nobody speaks to anybody, especially on the tube.
Well, where we live in London, you just made me, when we moved, we went to the IKEA up here, and we used to go to the IKEA in South London, and people were speaking to us, and my kids were like, "Mummy, it's quite nice here. People are saying hello."
Well, it does make a difference, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to see that more in a big city. There are so many other variables. There isn't quite the same community, so I guess it's more difficult.
And I think as well, when we're talking about people being overloaded, that there tends to, and not, you know, there tends to be more stresses if you are living in that big city and that lifestyle, because, you know, and you're traveling and you're commuting and there's more variables. So with more variables, likely it's going to bring more stress.
Yes. And that meditation I used to do on the tube on my way to work was really great. Maybe I should record a guided version of it for those of you who are interested and put it on my audio page on thepracticalalchemist.uk. It really did set me up for the morning meeting when I went into work very early every day. Watch this space and let's see if I can get it recorded and online soon. Right now, though, it's time for another break. Back with more from Ruth Kudzi right after this from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're still listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station, with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, positive psychology and neuroscience expert Ruth Kudzi. Let's get straight back into the conversation. You know, in general, then, we're talking about working out our stresses, letting go or changing the way we live our lives day to day to eliminate those stresses or reduce them. Maybe you can't eliminate them, but we can reduce them. And so what else do you typically help people with when you're working with people? Because, you know, you talk about improving your performance generally in life. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that's about letting go. Like, first of all, it's stress reduction, but also it's about learning to identify not only what you're good at, but what you really enjoy doing.
Oh, yeah.
So there's this whole, there's a book called Flow, and there's this whole idea of this being in flow state. So flow state is meant to be where you are really good at something and you enjoy it, and creating those moments when you can be in flow state during your week and really thinking about what they are. I have this thing that there's this idea that we have. It's from Gay Hendricks, A Big Leap, but also from Flow, and I can't pronounce the guy's name who wrote the book, but if you I'll send you it for links. But if you are like the zone of excellence where you're good at things and zone of genius where you're like really good and you enjoy it and you're engaged. And it's always interesting to let people go of things that they're good at to really focus on where they excel. And that's a really interesting point for people. I think there's also this point, and kind of we talked about stress being bad. There's like this for high performance. There is this point where we've got a certain amount of tension or stress or discomfort. However, we're still really engaged and motivated, and we're getting pleasure. So that dopamine. So we've got like adrenaline and dopamine. And that is the kind of peak performance point of our brain. Now, I think that because we know stress is so detrimental, helping people identify just before they get to that stress point and thinking about what they need and where they are can be really beneficial. So we might be looking at, you know, what is that point for you? Where is that point where you feel you can get the most done? So Many of us work really well to deadlines, but if we have too many deadlines, we can be overwhelmed. So it's thinking about what we need. And I think it's also about helping people work with both systems in their brains, their kind of rational decision-making system, which we've always got this preference for, haven't we? Like data and facts, but also learning to tune into more of your intuition.
Yeah.
So helping people to recognize what they think and feel and where that comes from, as well as looking at those hard facts. And someone said to me the other day, it's about really supporting people with their human doing, like, okay, how are we making decisions and everything else? But their human being, how are we being? And what is that telling us too? So it's like, it's about going inside as well as outside.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Gay Hendricks there, his book, The Big Leap. I would really recommend Gay Hendricks to anybody who wants to read up a little bit more about this kind of stuff, because he's one of the authors who I've really enjoyed over the years. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, he's great. And you'll have to tell me who the other
author is. I will. He's a positive psychologist. So, and yeah, it's not stress. It is my menopausal brain can't remember his name off the top of my head either. So I will get that and I'll let you know. But the book is called Flow.
So. Okay, brilliant. I should know that, really, shouldn't I? But so, yeah, so it is important. It is really important to find out what you are, or just work with what you're really good at. Now, again, not everybody can do that. People feel that they are constrained by circumstance. You know, so, you know, when people are feeling like that, they're saying, well, that's all very well, but I've got, you know, I've got to do this job because.
Yeah.
How do you work with that?
Well, so there's a great guy called John DeMartini, who talks about values and stuff.
He does. Yeah. So, I trained with John.
Did you? Yes. Oh, I love John. He talks about, like, if you like thinking about where you're really engaged and what you really love, but he talks about, doesn't he, like, you know, you can link. So linking. Yeah. So if you're thinking about, okay, well, I have to do this thing, or I'm in this job and I have to do it. And often it's like for survival or whatever it mm-hmm. may be. But how can we link this into something that we enjoy? How can we create those moments of dopamine and pleasure and in our day? So even if you're doing things that you don't enjoy, how are you rewarding yourself? And, you know, it's stuff that James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits as well. You know, it's actually, how are we playing our brains? Like, our brains love dopamine. We crave dopamine. We are driven by dopamine. And interestingly, we're driven by irregular dopamine. So if we do something and we may or may not get a reward, we're more likely to repeat it than if we do something and we know we're going to get a reward. So weird. And it's because basically, if you think about our brains, in the past, we'd go out and hunt for food, right? And then we'd not get any food and we'd come back, but we'd still need to go and hunt for food again. So, you know, that idea that we might get a reward was enough to motivate us. And we're still in that place now. And that is what social media companies do to us, by the way. They exactly. give us a regular rewards, and that's what gets us hooked. That is what gambling does. That is what I'm luckily not on all of those, although they do look quite fun sometimes. I'm not on all of those dating apps and all that stuff.
Oh, no, me neither, yeah.
But I think those as well play by that same rule. So what was my whole point of saying that? It's understanding our brain. It is understanding our brain and linking stuff to something that makes you feel good is going to actually improve your well-being overall.
Yes, absolutely. And this notion of linking values, it's what can you say is, in simple terms, right? It's you know, you've got a job to do. You've got something that you need to do, finish, complete, and it might be something that you really hate doing. So what is it about that that will allow you to move forward with it because of the prize, if you like, the end reward that will actually give you that dopamine fix? So it's being able to say, well, yeah, okay, but I can, you know, this fits my values you know, these are my values and this will fit in this way. So I can do that because it will get me to, you know, my destination almost. It's a simple way of looking at it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a simple way, and it's a way that works for our brain. Simple works. I think again, we see all these people who are like, you know, hacking our brains, all these things. And yeah, there's loads of things that can make us sharper. Mm. But the best thing we can do for our brain is to sleep. That's the best thing. And often you see people and they're like, they're doing all of these complex things. And it's like, if you just slept, moved a bit more and drank some more water, you know, and maybe didn't have as many things on your to-do list, you probably would be working, your performance would go up. You don't need to have all of this hacking and everything else.
No, and you know what's been going through my head as well as we've been talking like this is the book. We're talking about books a lot today for some reason, but you know, another book which you're bound to be aware of is Who Moved My Cheese?
Yes.
By Dr. Spencer Johnson. And it's a really brilliant metaphor for us, you know, getting what we want in life, getting to where we want to be in life. So it's another one that I would recommend to anybody as well, if you want to go and get that. So, from anything, from, you know, relationships to just general kind of peace of mind, how would you get from A to B? You've read the book, presumably.
I have read the book. I haven't read it for a while, but it's something. And the other one that people keep talking to me about, which I haven't read, is Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. Have you read that one? I mean,
I haven't.
I do think if you name a book something like that, people are always going to remember the name.
Of course they are. Yeah, of course they are. But there are lots of good books out there. And you have a podcast, don't you, as well?
I have a podcast called How to Feel Better. I've started three podcasts, and we're actually going back to my second podcast, The Coaching Hub, from next year. Mm-hmm. Just because people know me for coaching and I run a coach training school, so it makes sense to do that. And this is probably a symptom of ADHD that I've had three different podcasts and then decided to go back to the second one. But we do have How to Feel Better, which we're just finishing off some interviews there. And to be honest, it's very similar to the Coaching Hub podcast. So I'm not sure what happened there.
Well, it's bound to be good in any case. And How to Feel Better is such a simple title, but that's what it's all about, really. It's just what it's all about. It's just, you know, that's it. How to Feel Better.
Yeah. And that was the name of my second book. So that was, and I think sometimes people get in positive psychology and everything else that you have to feel amazing every single day. Every day has to. And, you know, if we just felt that tiny bit better, if we just were a little bit, you know, a bit more content or a bit more engaged or a bit more, or had a little bit more meaning in our lives, it would have a massive impact. And I think, and I'm guilty of this as well, but I think sometimes we go into all or nothing thinking, don't we? And, you know, we're coming up to New Year's resolutions and people love it. Like, I'm never going to drink alcohol again. I'm going to run every day for 10K. And they don't do it. And they don't do it because it's so extreme. But going, I'm going to move my body every day.
But also coming back to John DeMartini, you're not going to do it unless your values are aligned with it. Yeah.
And you're not going to do it either unless it links to your identity.
Exactly.
So if you don't see yourself as somebody who exercises regularly, or, you know, you're not going to do it. And so all you're doing is creating some misery for yourself.
Yeah, I don't do New Year's resolutions anymore. It's just a waste of time, really.
Oh, my gosh, it's a complete waste of time. Let's go and enjoy New Year's Eve and have a lovely New Year's Day and not think about it all.
Correct. Yes, we beat ourselves up. And then you have, you know, people who just say, oh, I'm not going to drink alcohol in January. Well, okay, fine.
If that works for you, yeah.
It just seems like a sort of, you know, well, why don't you just drink less often?
The whole year, yeah.
Forever. Yeah. But then, you know, I'm talking from the perspective of somebody who doesn't drink alcohol anymore. So people might say I'm a little bit biased. But yeah, So your book, How to Feel Better, is available wherever anybody might buy their books, presumably.
Yes. So obviously the big online one, but you can also order it from all good bookshops. And it is in, it's been stocked in kind of Smiths and Waterstones and stuff, but not, you know, I've not seen it, but it's been spotted.
Oh, right. Oh, well, well, that's good. That's good. I do find that more often than not now you have to order a book because they just don't have the shelf space. They don't have the shelf space for all these books that are out there.
Which is great in a way that so many people are writing books. But yeah, it would be lovely to one day go into a bookshop and see your book. That's my aspiration.
Yeah.
But, you know, ordering it, and they're great. I mean, we've got a local bookshop. My friend's got a great bookshop as well. Yeah, and you can always get a copy.
Absolutely. Well, as long as you, yeah, as long as you just go in and ask for it. They're always, I always find that in bookshops, people are very, very happy to help you, and they'll very happily order a book in for you. So don't feel shy about doing that. And if anybody wants to work with you, if they feel that they need a little bit of guidance when it comes to a bit of positivity, positive psychology in their lives, and if they want to just feel better, do better, you know, achieve what they want to achieve, where do they get in touch with you?
So the easiest place to find me, and I'm a very easy person to find because there's nobody else called Ruth Kudzi, is my website, which is ruthkudzi.com, K-U-D-Z-I. I'm Ruth Kudzi on all social media. Yeah, and there's no other one, which I think is positive. And I'm sure there are things that maybe would be unhelpful as well. But yeah, I'm going with the positive.
Well, I think that's brilliant. So people can get in touch with you through your website and on social media. Fantastic. And you are obviously based in England, but you do work with people all around the world, I think, don't you?
All around the world, yeah. As long as we can make the time zone work, we can make it work.
Yeah. And so you work with clients individually, but you also have a coaching program teach coaches.
We train people. So that's through my brand Optimus Coach Academy, and we train people to become coaches. So either we train people to become accredited coaches with the International Coaching Federation, and that's usually individuals, and then we work with organizations and groups, and that might be developing existing skills as well.
Yeah, which is really important. And I think it's great when corporations actually employ somebody like you to come in and really look after the health, the mental health of their employees. So, Ruth, I think it's been, I know it's been a joy and a pleasure to have you on the show today. Final words, just one thing. If somebody asked you, what one thing could I do in my life today that might help me feel better? What would it be? There's a question for you.
Yeah, I'd say have at least 2 hours of your day when you don't have your phone with you.
Oh, nice one. Yeah, that's...
I won't be sponsored by Apple.
No, nor would I. No, that's a nice one, actually. Yeah, leave your phone somewhere. Go off and have a walk without your phone. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Ruth. It's been a joy.
Thank you.
The fabulous Ruth Kudzi there. And that book with the difficult to pronounce author's name is called Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience by, and I'm going to give it a go here, apologies if I make a total mess of it, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. Yeah, I'm sure that wasn't right. But anyway, I'm sure searching for the title will land you in the right place. And on that note, we're coming to the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining me. Do follow me as The Practical Alchemist on Facebook and Instagram, or you can subscribe to updates at my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk, as I've said before. Also, check out safehavenhealing.uk for more about my energy work. And then there's the show I co-host with psychiatrist and coach Dr. Mark Goulston, also here on UK Health Radio. It's called Hurt Less, Live More, and we'd love to have you join us as we dive into how we can overcome any pain we experience in order to live a full life. And of course, I'd love you to join me again right here for more alchemy. So until next time, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.